Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Eller for the draw, and as the puck drops, the words that DC fans have been waiting to hear since 1974, the Washington Capitals are the 2018 Stanley Cup champions. It's not a dream. It's not a desert mirage. It's Lord Stanley, and he is coming to Washington.
7 years since that Stanley Cup moment in Las Vegas. Maybe their best chance to do it again starts tonight with Game 1 of their first round series against Montreal, Capital One Arena tonight in Chinatown. The NHL playoffs begin for Washington, and it's been 7 years since they've actually won a series. Grant Paulson's going to join us today at 11 a.m. We'll talk Caps. We'll talk some NFL draft with Grant. Sam Monson from the 33rd team used to be with Pro Football Focus. You'll hear my conversation with Sam at about 11:30. Ben Standig later on in the show at 12. I've got some draft stuff to talk about today. I'm going to start with the running backs. On Friday, I gave you three players I don't think Washington will take at 29. Some follow-up to that because a lot of you weighed in on your thoughts, and many disagreed, which is fine. This, by the way, is one of the busier sports weeks, you know, on the sports calendar. You've got the NFL draft Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You've got the NBA playoffs, which are underway, and you've got the NHL playoffs, which are underway. Love this time of year where you've got meaningful games and events basically every night for the next 2 months. This from Dennis. Dennis writes, "Let me be the next one, Kevin, to thank you for your lame suggestion to watch the NBA playoffs. Is there a close game to be found?" There was on Saturday, Dennis. The Clippers and the Nuggets went to overtime on Saturday. I don't think it was a great basketball game necessarily, but you are correct that we have had 8 first-round game ones in the NBA playoffs, 4 on Saturday and 4 yesterday, and we have had but one decided by less than double digits, and that was the Nuggets beating the Clippers, coming from behind, 15 points behind, to beat the Clippers in overtime. Everything else has been blowout city, although last night's Warriors-Rockets game was crazy. The Warriors took game one 95-85. I mean, that was a throwback. Steve Kerr said to 1997. It was a throwback to the early 2000s. I mean, lots of defense, lots of ugliness at times, but Steph Curry's brilliance came through. We'll talk a little bit about that game in a bit. I do want to start with the Caps, who get their, you know, Stanley Cup process started tonight. Look, they have not been a very good playoff team during the Alex Ovechkin era, with the exception of one season, 2017-2018. You go through the years, all right? 2007, 2008. 2008, it was the first Ovechkin playoff season. They lost to the Flyers at home in seven. 2009, they beat the Rangers but lost to the Penguins in a seventh and deciding game at home. 2010, we remember that disaster. First round, Montreal. They haven't played the Canadiens since 2010 in the postseason. Game 7 at home, Halak'd. Yeah, Yaroslav Halak totally shut him out through that 7-game series. He was lights out, and that was a stunning first-round upset. They got to the second round in 2011, but went out meekly to Tampa in four straight. In 2012, they had that exciting game winner in Game 7 at Boston, but lost at home again in a Game 7 to the Rangers. Next year, lost in the first round to the Rangers in seven games. Didn't make it in 2014. The 2015 season, Game 7 to the Rangers in the second round. Then it was the Penguins in 2016 who they lost to in six games in the second round. And then they lost to the Penguins in Game 7 at home in 2017. They had not, up until 2018, gotten out of the second round. And so many Game 7 losses, several of them at home, before 2018 struck. And look, you go back to that first-round series against Columbus, they dropped the first two at home and had to come back and win it 4-2. Of course, the Game 6 in Pittsburgh felt like a major hurdle cleared to beat the Pens in the postseason. They went on to win the last two to beat Tampa in 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals and then beat Vegas in 5 to win the Cup. But take 2018 out. Man, it's been nothing but falling short of expectations most of the time and doing it in heartbreak fashion. Although, since winning the Cup, losing Game 7 to Carolina the next year at home, another Game 7 loss at home, since then, they haven't been close. Lost to the Islanders in 5, that was COVID. Lost to the Bruins in 5 in 21. Lost to the Panthers in 22. In the first round, and then they'd missed the playoffs altogether, and last year got blanked in the first round by the Rangers. This feels like pre-2018. I know it's not exactly that, because they do have a Stanley Cup, but they've now gone, they've gone 6 years without getting out of the first round, one of those 6 years not even qualifying for the postseason. And I had Ted Leonsis on the show 2 weeks ago now, something like that. And I asked him, like, is there some pressure for Alex to get a second one, or at least to not get eliminated in the first round for what would be the 9th time during his career? And he actually suggested that there was some pressure on him too. I'll tell you what, man, that organization, thank God for 2018, because it could have been one and done against Columbus in that first round. Remember how competitive that first series was? It's the randomness of hockey, man, in the postseason. I get it. I understand. Hockey's crazy. And the puck bounced their way in 2018. They lost two overtime games at home and then had to go to two overtimes in Game 3 to get their first win in that series against Columbus. And then we're in a Game 5 overtime game against Columbus. They could have easily lost that series. And I know you can go back and point to the series that they've lost that should have gone their way because they outplayed the opponent. But the puck, luck, didn't go their way. I don't know. It feels like after the regular season they had, you know, finishing with the best record in the East, 111 points, the second best record in the league overall, even though they're not picked to win it all. They're picked third or fourth in the East, odds-wise, by the odds makers. What do they know, man? Making odds for hockey? That's crazy. Because the best usually don't win the regular season best, usually don't win in the postseason. But it does feel like, it feels like based on their regular season, no matter how they ended it, and they didn't end it well, you know, they lost a bunch of games coming down the stretch. You know, there's been discussion that this was more about, you know, the focus on Ovi down the stretch. Okay, that's fine. Now you got to put it together because they lost coming down the stretch. They lost 8 of their final 12 games. A first-round exit to Montreal would be one of the biggest disappointments of the Ovechkin era. I think they got to at least get to an Eastern Conference Finals with this team. A second-round exit would be disappointing. Max, you're a big Caps guy. Do you feel the pressure that maybe is back on this organization? Maybe back on Ovi to a certain degree?
Oh, yeah.
Not the same level of pressure that you had in 2018, but 7 years since they've won a series.
It's been a long time, and it does not feel like it's been 7 years, but the fact that it has been 7 years, just it's crazy. This, I'm trying to view this as a full circle moment for this team and for Alex Ovechkin specifically, because 2010 really did a number on this fan base, because they were just a wagon the entire year, and then Montreal just out of nowhere. And I feel like that could happen again. There's definitely no question that it is a possibility, but you got to think that this team and Alex Ovechkin at just are taking their wealth of knowledge and experience and are putting their all into these next two series, for these next four series, really,
yeah,
to get all the way to the final. But I think they're not going to play with their food, you know what I mean, for these next couple weeks. It's been, they've did the Ovechkin chase and the, it's been, they were, I've heard they were 3-9 since March 25th, which is just a terrible final month of the season. So I'm hoping that that's a lot of just human nature, because they were the first to clinch a playoff spot. They were the first to lock up their conference. I just think that it's, you know, it's time to lock in. It's time to go. And I think this team is ready for it.
So far, the NHL, they're spreading their first-round games out. The NBA got all game ones done on Saturday and Sunday, and then they begin to spread them out. The NHL does it right from the jump. So Saturday, there were 2 games. Yesterday, there were 3 games. Tonight, there are 4 games. Tonight, you have all you have 2 game ones and 2 game twos in the postseason. So far, the home team of the 5 games played have won 4 of those. There's only been 1 so-called upset. Colorado beat Dallas on the road on Saturday night 5-1. The home team is taking care of business in the other two. And I think, you know, I had Alan May on my podcast. I may play some of that today before the end of the show. I think Alan said it, and I think on Friday we had Tarik El-Bashir, who said the same thing. You know, Montreal, after reaching the Cup Finals during COVID and losing in the Cup Finals, where they could only allow during the COVID postseason 3,500 fans per game. All right. Now, they were playing Florida or Tampa in the finals, and they allowed, you know, a full arena. So the Montreal fan base has not seen because they have not made the playoffs since. If you go back to Montreal on Friday night, 1-1, that place, which already is a deafening, you know, home arena. Look at me talking about hockey home crowds. But I know enough to know Montreal as a home crowd is awesome. And so you got to get these two. You got to go back to Montreal up 2-0. Can't give them a 1-1 and belief and have that fired up fan base to face when you get there on Friday night. We'll see. Grant Paulson will jump on with us. Grant loves the Caps, and we'll talk Caps. We'll talk NFL draft with Grant as well. Now, in terms of, yes, Dennis, the NBA playoffs, the games were just, I mean, a couple of things real quickly. Number one is, my God, the OKC Thunder. They won game one by 51 points. 51. The score at halftime was 68-36. They had a 32-point lead at halftime. They had a 59-point lead. 59 at the end of three quarters. OKC, for those of you who haven't paid attention, and I've mentioned this a few times, they won 68 games in the regular season, and they had the largest margin of victory in the history of the NBA. The history of the NBA. But they're young, and they're inexperienced. They played last year, and they ended up losing a second-round series, close second-round series, but they lost. They have young players, but God, they are deep. Tell you who played really well for them yesterday was former Terp Aaron Wiggins. He has had a very good season in Oklahoma City. He had 21 off the bench. He's been outstanding this year. The Celtics were down at halftime, but they pulled away and won by 17. The Heat were hanging in there with the Cavs, but they ended up losing by 21. And then last night's game, which was the game of the day, going into the day, you know, Golden State, with the experience, with Draymond, with Steph, with Jimmy Butler, on the road against Houston, who finished second in the Western Conference, with a bunch of players that don't necessarily have as much experience. Now, Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet have been on big-time playoff teams, as has Steven Adams, who plays off the bench. But this game was nuts. It was intense. It was physical. I don't think I've ever seen the following. A team end up with 22 offensive rebounds, which is what Houston had against Golden State, and they lose by 10. Their offensive rebound differential was 16. They had 22 offensive rebounds to Golden State 6. They out-rebounded Golden State in total by 16 and lost by 10. How did that happen? Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler. Steph Curry hit, if you haven't seen the highlight package of Steph Curry from last night, some of the threes he hit in this game, insane. Logo threes, contested falling out of bounds three-pointers. He had 31 points of the 95 that Golden State scored. He was 5-for-9 from behind the arc. Jimmy Butler was the closer. Final 6 points for Golden State when the game got to within four. He had 25. He had 6 assists, 7 rebounds, and 5 steals in the game. They've got 2 bona fide all-time postseason closers. They're interesting. I'll tell you what, though, watching that game last night, because I bet Golden State, when they traded for Jimmy Butler to win the West, watching that game, even though Golden State won by 10, I don't feel great about the series. I think Houston's just younger, more physical, and I think they just, Curry just hit some ridiculous shots. I don't know how he's going to do that. Well, we know how he'll do it. He does it all the time. He does it all the time. But wow, that was a show last night, and I think that Golden State could get worn out by Houston and their physicality. I mean, Dylan Brooks has always been that way. Jalen Green had a terrible game for them last night, 3-for-15, but I still think Houston's got a shot, even though I'm very much rooting for Golden State. Now, as far as the NBA on Saturday, man, you had one great game. The one competitive game, and it was ugly because it was not well played. Man, the Clippers, I love the Clippers. I love Kawhi Leonard. Ty Lue gets all this cred for being a great playoff coach. I don't think there's a heavier ISO team right now when it gets to the postseason. And when you're playing a smart team like Denver, you end up turning the ball over too much when the ball sticks. And it sticks with Harden. It sticks with Kawhi. Kawhi had 7 turnovers in the game. Harden had, I think, 4 or 5 turnovers in the game. And they had 20 total, and they still could have easily won the game. We'll see what happens tonight. That's enough on the NBA's first 2 days. When we come back, so I've started to look at some of the position groups, as I promised I would last week. I'm going to get to the edge players tomorrow. Today, I wanted to focus in on the running backs. Took some time, kind of looked at the backs. If you missed what I said Friday about the three players that I don't think they'll take at 29 in the first round, one of them is a running back. We'll do some draft talk next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
And six. Genty, straight up the middle. Genty spinning. Genty still on his feet to the goal line. Put him up. Touchdown.
Look, make no mistake about this draft. There is one back, I think, and just one worthy of spending a first-round pick, especially, you know, if you're talking about a higher first-round pick, and that's Boise State running back Ashton Genty. So I'm going to do this over the next few days, take a couple of position groups, and just give you my thoughts. This isn't, you know, analytical film breakdown. This is a lot of watching a lot of college football and then going back and reading some stuff about some of the guys that I really liked and taking a look at some of the guys that I didn't see a lot of. I think that when draft analysts say about this class that it is a deep running back class, I think that's true. But man, there is a ton of variety, meaning that if you want someone, you know, who's really excellent between the tackles, you have that. If you have, you know, a need for a home run guy on the edge, there's some of that. There are guys that are good at both. But overall, Genty is the number one back in this draft. I think he has star potential for sure. But also, it's really important with Genty, if you haven't watched him, to recognize that he is different than the running back stars in the game today because of his size. You know, he's only 5'8". He's 205, 210, somewhere around there. Don't think Saquon Barkley or even a guy like Bijan Robinson. Those guys, Barkley in particular, are just bigger, you know, and also move really well. In terms of like an all-time best case comparison for Ashton Genty, I would say you look at LT, you look at LaDainian Tomlinson, and you say there are similarities in their styles of play, there are similarities in their size, and if you believe that Ashton Genty ends up becoming a superstar running back, and I think there's a chance of that, no doubt, it probably looks something like Tomlinson did, like LT did in his prime. Like today's player comps, they're tough to find. Like I thought of a guy like Aaron Jones or Josh Jacobs, maybe McCaffrey, but you know, he can catch the ball, but not like McCaffrey. McCaffrey is an elite route runner as a running back. You know, he's the best route running running back receiver we've seen in the game in a long, long time. But Genty is, I mean, look, he's a hard guy to comp to because he's 5'8". But at the same time, at 5'8", he's a guy that can carry 20-plus times a game. And the reason for that is he's fearless. He's physical. He's got very good vision. He's got great balance. He's got very good patience. He's versatile. He can catch. He can block. You know, it's hard to not like Ashton Genty when thinking about all of the things that he does at a very high level and understanding why, you know, especially since the running back has sort of come back in vogue, that you would certainly look at him and say he's the best back in the draft. And whoever number two is, you count a couple of spots to get to number two. Now, how it works out when they get to the pros, who knows? And I'll say this about, you know, all the positions and all of the draft talk. You know, we can read about some of the red flags on some of these guys, but the teams know. They're the ones that are talking to the players, interviewing the players. They are the ones who are talking to coaches and friends and family members, etc. They're doing the due diligence, we're not. But everything you read about Genty is first class. I think he's got a chance to be special. It just might look a bit different than maybe what you're thinking of if you haven't watched a lot of college football. He's 5'8", and I think he's listed at 210, but it's not like he's not a 220 looking guy. He looks more like he's 200 than 210, But God, is he strong, and he is physical and fearless. I think one of the most impressive performances from him of the season was the playoff game against Penn State. I mean, you had a guy in Genty that did not have an offensive line capable, anywhere near capable enough of creating any sort of crease, any sort of running room for him. And when you got to that playoff game against Boise State, remember Boise had one of the, you know, byes, you know, and Penn State knocked off SMU. Genty ran for 100 yards. They were 100, it was 104 to be exact. They were 104 of the toughest yards you'll ever see. It took them 30 carries to get there. And I would say on half of the carries, when you go back and watch that game, there is activity in the backfield almost instantaneously after the snap. How he was able to churn out some of those 1, 2, 3 yard gains from where he started and who was around him speaks to his toughness. So Genty's the number one back. And look, I'm doing more in depth on running backs. I do this every year on backs, but more in depth because I think Washington's going to draft one of these guys. I think there's a really good chance Washington drafts a running back. And I think I'm going to give you now 10 guys because I think from 2 to 10, you can basically put them in any order you want. It comes down to preference. It probably comes down to some of the due diligence and some of the things that are learned about these players. But do you want, you know, the home run threat, or do you want the patient between the tackles powerhouse? You know, do you want the versatile guy? Do you want the zone run guy? Do you want the gap guy, duo guy? I mean, there's a lot of variety. And I would say there are 10 guys for me after Genty that you can put in any order. And I know that Hampton is the guy that everybody believes is the second best back in this draft. On Friday, when I gave you three players that I thought Washington would not select at number 29, I gave you Omarion Hampton from North Carolina. I like him a lot, but there's no way you can watch him and say he's worthy of a first-round pick if you believe that the running back position to go, if you're going to pick him in the first round, you got to feel like this guy's going to be elite. Like, there's no question he's going to be a top five back in the game. And I think there is a question about that. He's not Genty, but he is in a group of like 10 guys that you could mix and match and put him in any order you want. I like Hampton. He's got a great frame. He's got excellent vision and patience and power. I think his speed is fine. It's not elite speed on a football field. It's not Genty. It's not Travion Henderson. Travion Henderson, by a long shot, has the best home run, take it to the house ability in the draft of the running backs. But I like Hampton. He's elusive. I just don't think he is Saquon Barkley or Robinson or Gibbs or McCaffrey. So I'm not spending a first-round pick on Hampton. And I think he's in a group of 10 guys, you know, that you could mix and match. You could, none of these guys do I think they all have almost equal chances of being super productive at the next level. Caleb Johnson from Iowa is one of my favorites because when you consider, if you know anything about college football and watch it, Iowa literally cannot throw the football. In an era where everybody's spreading you out and throwing the ball all over the field, Iowa is pro style and they can't throw the football. I mean, literally, they cannot throw the forward pass, and they've not been able to do it in a few years now. Caleb Johnson faced the highest percentage of loaded boxes of any back in the draft by a long shot because teams just loaded the box and said, go ahead, try to throw the football with one of your terrible quarterbacks, and they couldn't do it. He is so tough. I really like Caleb Johnson. Yards after contact, he seeks it. He's really good between the tackles. He's excellent as an outside zone, you know, runner, inside zone, outside zone, but really outside zone. A lot of those toss pitches, you just see his vision take over. He's not got like home run speed. He'll get caught, but he is tough. Love Caleb Johnson. Travion Henderson's the opposite of Caleb Johnson. if there were a second back to go in the first round just based on this dude has the chance to take it to the house every time he touches it, it's Ohio State running back Travion Henderson. You know, four-year guy, shared the spotlight with Quinshon Judkins last year after he transferred from Ole Miss. Apparently, the intangibles are off the charts with Henderson. Great teammate, smart, coachable, the whole nine yards. And he is so explosive. He ran, I think, 4.43 at the 40, and it looks it. He plays a little bit upright. He's not great between the tackles. He's okay. Here's what you have to be careful of when you're looking at any Ohio State player as a skill position player. There's always daylight, man. Ohio State, it doesn't matter who they're playing. Even when they play Penn State, even when they play Michigan, and I know the production wasn't necessarily there, but if you're just looking at a highlight reel of Ohio State receivers, now, next year's receiver, 2 years from now, their receiver, he would be. He'd probably be, right now, the number one player in the draft if he was coming out, and I'm talking about true freshman Jeremiah Smith. He may be the best wide receiver prospect to come out when he comes out in 2027. Emeka Egbuka is a potential late first-round pick. But when you look at those guys and Travion Henderson and Judkins and anybody that touches the ball for Ohio State, here's what you see all the time. Daylight. They just dominate offensively. It's scheme. It's O-line. The whole thing. But, look, he's so fast. He is elusive in the open field. Between the tackles, a little bit too upright. You know, his vision's fine. He's not going to run people over necessarily. But if you're looking for the guy that is going to give you in an offense like Washington's, you know, where you've got the quarterback is a major threat. You've got a receiver. You've got a second receiver who can be in the backfield. Like, I would be excited to see Travion Henderson in Washington's backfield. Do I think he's worthy of number 29 overall? I don't, because I think the value isn't there taking a running back at 29, unless it was Genty, and he's not going to be there. Because I think there are 10 guys after Genty, and those guys aren't going in the first round. You know, maybe one or two others go in the first round. Maybe Hampton goes in the first round. Maybe Henderson sneaks into the first round. But I don't think that's good value there. I think there are other backs. If you miss on a guy like Henderson, you know, at 29, hoping to get him at 61 and he's gone, you'll have other options there. Henderson's special, though, in terms of his game-breaking ability. So Hampton, Caleb Johnson, Travion Henderson, in terms of like the group of my next 10 after Genty, that I think you could put in a lot of different orders based on preference, based on a lot of the due diligence. Quinshon Judkins, Henderson's running mate, is good between the tackles. He also has breakaway speed. It's not the same explosive, electric breakaway speed that Henderson has, but Judkins is better vision, better at making people miss, running through contact, and Judkins would be in that group of 10. I've mentioned this guy now for 2 years because I think the first time I watched him at Oregon State, I said, this guy is a pro running back. Damian Martinez would be in that group of 10 for me. He's one of my favorite backs because he's just got elite vision as a running back. He's bigger, you know, he's strong. His speed is good. I mean, I think he ran a 4.51. His relative athletic score was outstanding. You know, I've seen him ranked anywhere from the fourth best running back in the draft to like the 18th best running back in the draft. Part of that is because he wasn't as productive at Miami last year as a, you know, bell cow back. But I think he could be a three down back at the NFL level. You know, he's 6 feet. He's 218, 220, somewhere around there. I mean, he brings it. He, first of all, the comparison is Le'Veon Bell. He has that kind of patience. Now, it's not stopping the backfield patience. There was a guy that I loved a few years ago in the draft. Washington was going to take him, but Detroit took him before in the second round. And that was Kerryon Johnson from Auburn. There are tremendous similarities between the two. Now, Kerryon Johnson did not have a good NFL career, or hasn't yet. I don't even know if he's still in the league, because of injuries. Like, he just kept getting injured. But that's the running style. Martinez is powerful, but has really, really excellent feel and vision and patience and feet. He can catch the football. They didn't throw it to him a lot, but he's fine as a screen back, because him in open space with his vision is outstanding. I love him. I don't know if you have to take him in the second round. It would be great if he were available on day three, because if they got him, look, I'd feel probably better about Henderson in our offense. You know, not as an every down back, though. You know, I don't know that he's your first. You know, he's a change of pace. He's your third down back. But he's back there on first down, don't get me wrong. But he's not carrying the ball 25 times if you need that kind of offense, which Washington really doesn't. By the way, I love both of those backs, too, in particular, you know, in the offense Washington runs, because they are stand next to the quarterback, you know, shotgun, pistol backs, for sure. Who else is on this list? I really like Trevor Etienne from Georgia. Now, he was hurt. He missed some games. But I think Etienne has elite-level vision as well. His size is a little bit on the smaller size, but he is explosive. Like, I look at some of the really fast guys that also have great vision and can do it between the tackles. I don't think Travion Henderson can carry it 20 times in a game, although he could do it, but that's not why you're drafting him. Trevor Etienne, I think, could. Is he as explosive breakaway as Henderson? No, but he's close. Love Trevor Etienne. Love Bashaul Tootin from Virginia Tech, who, by the way, is also an outstanding kickoff returner. Another really good vision back and versatile. Who else is on my list? So the 10, Hampton, Caleb Johnson, Travion Henderson, Judkins, Martinez, Etienne, Tootin. I love Devin Neal from Kansas. This is one of those guys that would not surprise me if Washington is in love with, too, because he's one of those super high character guys. He has, I think he's a team captain. He has, by the way, you know, his size is like 5'11", 215. Didn't run great at the combine. I think he ran like 4'5", 4'6", something like that. But really good vision, really, you know, patient as a runner, really sets up defenders well. He's got, I think, better football speed on the field than a 40 time would project. He has really good pass catching abilities out of the backfield. By the way, was a baseball player at Kansas as well. Really like Devin Neal a ton. And he's one of those guys that I think is really high on the character list. Who else did I have? DJ Giddens from Kansas State. Really find him to be incredibly interesting as well. You know, he was basically in college for 4 years. He was not a senior this year. He may have been a fourth-year junior. 6 feet, 215. He ran really well at the combine. Ran 4.43, and you see that speed. But another guy that's got good vision and good patience. Got to have that at the NFL level. You can't be fast to the line of scrimmage. You know, one of the things that I almost didn't put him on the list, because I think Judkins sometimes at Ohio State is a bit too fast to the line of scrimmage. I almost took him off this list, but he's so tough and he's got great vision. But DJ Giddens from K-State, you know, is 6 feet, 5'11", 6 feet, 215. There's a lot to like about his anticipation, his vision. You know, he's not the big time, you know, tackler breaker. You know, he's not going to run people over, but I liked him. Taj Brooks, Texas Tech. Love him. Loved him. I loved watching him, you know, over the years. Now, he's shorter size-wise, but he doesn't play that way. This is another guy, patient, runs with like really good, you know, vision and pad level. He can be a workhorse. I think Taj Brooks is very underrated in this draft because I was looking him up and a lot of people have like a sixth round grade on Taj Brooks. And there was one other one. Where's my list here? I like Jaden Blue from Texas. Look, again, you know, Texas, like Ohio State, you know, the Ryan Day, the Sarkisian, the schemes, it's like you got to be a little bit careful because there's always so much daylight to run to. But he is an explosive back. I think that, you know, he's another one of those guys. What did he run in the 40? I wrote it down. Did he run sub 4.5? Oh, yeah. He ran 4.38, and that's what he plays like. He is, you know, a major home run threat. I think I just gave you the 10 guys after Genty. Hampton, Caleb Johnson, Travion Henderson, Judkins, ETN, Martinez, Tootin, Neal, Giddens, Brooks, Blue. Maybe I just gave you 11. I bet you somebody from that list is wearing a Washington uniform next year at running back. I'm not a big Cam Scataboo fan. You know, he obviously was tremendous in the playoff game against Texas. God, he's so tough, and he's versatile. He can do a lot of things. He doesn't run well. I don't think he's got great vision. Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State's an interesting player because he did not have a good season this year after having a phenomenal junior season at Oklahoma State. Part of that is they just weren't very good offensively. I think he catches the ball well. I think he's versatile. I think the season he had, when you go back and look at the junior season, the problem with Gordon is he's one of these, you know, super upright running backs. Like, he runs like, you know, for those of you old enough to remember Eric Dickerson, he's not Eric Dickerson, or like a DeMarco Murray, you know, the upright style. But he's interesting because he can do so many things as a running back. Yeah. I think the guy that, to me, I wasn't expecting to really be blown away by, the injuries could be an issue. He played with a rib injury this year. I think he was injured the year before at Florida. But Travis Etienne's brother, is, I think, going to be a really good NFL back. The UCF guy, RJ Harvey, I mean, he can run. There is no doubt. Lots of space. You know, and he's terrific in space, but he's another guy that, you know, is all a 5'7 or 5'8. Sampson from Tennessee, Jordan James, they didn't make the list for me. I like Jaquez Hunter a little bit from Auburn. Anyway, I gave you the guys. Like, to me, if they don't, you know, Henderson, no back at 29 would be worthwhile for me. None, except for Genty. He's not going to be there. So I just think I'd be surprised if they take a running back at 29 because of that. Because I think if they're looking at these guys, it's like, okay, if we trade back and we have two picks in the second round, potentially, maybe, or we pick up a third rounder, we can get, you know, we can get a Caleb Johnson. We can get a Damian Martinez. We can get a Bashal Tootin from Virginia Tech. We can get a Devin Neal from Kansas, a Taj Brooks. We can get them on night two or day three. And I don't think there's a lot of difference. Some of these guys, there's variety, but I don't think there's a lot of difference in terms of what they're going to be at the pro level. Genty's special, though, but he's an odd special because he's just not that big. But and so you wonder, like, will he, given how many carries he had at the college level, will he hold up? But he is tough. He is one tough dude. But Travion Henderson's the one that it's like you picture him, you know, in a Kingsbury scheme, standing next to Jaden. They've got RPO in the game. They've got zone read as a possibility. And, you know, you're king the quarterback on some runs, and they're just gaping, you know, zone read holes with an improved offensive line potentially. And he's taken a couple of them for 50-plus yards. I mean, he's going to have 250 yard plus runs for somebody next year. But is he the guy that's going to, you know, give you 18 to 22 carries a game? I don't think so. His between the tackles, not so good. But it is exciting to think of Travion Henderson in a backfield with Jaden Daniels. And I think, you know, a guy like Devin Neal or a guy like Taj Brooks, the same thing. Martinez, the same thing. But with maybe, you know, a guy like Jaden Blue would be because of the speed and the breakaway threat as well. So this is a draft where you can get your running back in the later rounds of this draft. And I think that should be Washington's strategy. Unless they're just so in love with Travion Henderson and they don't feel like they can get him at 61. They're trying to trade back to take him early in the second round maybe. But they're like, he's just too good of a kid. He's too good of a – he's the perfect culture fit. He's, you know, he is standing side by side with our quarterback in the backfield. We feel like we just added just so much more speed and game-breaking ability, and we're going to be difficult to check. And that's the thing I would just say overall, offensively, you just need more speed. You need more breakaway, you need more explosiveness at the skill position spots. You're going to get some of that with Debo, but that's more, you know, after the catch, running people over. In terms of, you know, lining up with Henderson and Debo and Terry and, you know, and Ertz and Jaden, you know, you got a chance to, you know, have an offense that's really explosive. But again, I don't think I'd pick him at 29. There's just too much depth there. All right. Couple of other things coming up next. We'll do a What Do You Got? And then Grant Paulson will join us at 11. We'll talk Caps and draft with Grant. I'll do all of the edge guys that I've looked at on tomorrow's show. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, over the weekend, the Nats split their Easter doubleheader with the Colorado Rockies. Jake Irvin just struck out 9 in Game 1, giving up just 2 earned runs. They have the day off today, and will take on the O's tomorrow at Nats Park on 106.7 The Fan. College football, Nico Imaliava has announced he is officially transferring to UCLA. The deal is reportedly in the $1.5 million range when he was making $2.4 at Tennessee. Eagles wide receiver A.J. Brown had his car stolen last night. He tweeted out this morning, "Dear Philly, whoever stole my car last night, I'll make a deal with you. Bring back my car and I won't press charges, or when I find you today, it's going to be what it's going to be. Take it or leave it, my guy." That's not a guy I'd particularly be willing to mess with. And the Caps will take on Ivan Demidov and the Montreal Canadiens in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference first round. They're still a bit banged up. Alexi Protas is out with a cut from a skate on his foot. Martin Ferravari is questionable after turning his ankle against the New York Islanders just 2 games ago. Jacob Chychrun will play after being struck in the face by a puck at practice on Friday. And Logan Thompson was the first off the ice at practice just moments ago. Looks like he will be the starter in net tonight. And that's what's trending.
All right, we'll do a quick What Do You Got here, but let me just do it real quickly. We got Grant Paulson coming up. So you heard Max do it in the What's Trending. Nico Imaliava, the quarterback from Tennessee who wanted $4 million after committing to play for Tennessee for $2 million, about $2.4 million a year, has essentially transferred to UCLA for almost $1 million less, roughly about $800,000 to $900,000 less, not to mention he'll have to pay California state taxes, whereas in Tennessee you didn't have to do that. This was apparently, by all accounts, a really good kid who just got terrible advice from his parents, from his handlers. He looks like a villain. He'll be an all-time villain at Tennessee. This was not a split response, even though coaches are leaving left and right and players have now not one opportunity to hit the portal. College football players, if you don't know this, they have 2 opportunities to hit the portal. Last week and also in December. It's crazy. But they essentially can transfer in December and then decide to transfer again in April. It's insane what they're allowing in college football. It's one thing to have one transfer portal a year. College football is 2. And this guy got terrible advice. you know, in Josh Heupel's system as a true freshman, look, I think he looked, you know, like a true freshman at times. He's big. He's 6'6". He's a tremendous athlete. Tennessee ended up in a playoff game at Ohio State playing in the Big House. He had some bad games. He had some very good games. He was a freshman. The situation was great. The fan base was great. He had committed to $2.4 million per year. And then once he entered the portal after he wanted $4 million a year from Tennessee, because that's the going rate for people like Nico I right now. That's the going rate. And he ends up getting even less at UCLA because there wasn't nearly as much interest in him as he or his parents and handlers thought. Because there was, in watching him, great athleticism, but issues in processing and other just pocket passing issues. He's a dual threat. So he ends up making $800,000 to maybe $900,000 less than he would have made at Tennessee, and he's got to pay state taxes on it. Terrible, terrible advice for what everybody says is a really good kid. You know, a lot of the holding out from Tennessee wasn't necessarily him. By the way, UCLA had just paid another quarterback from App State $1.5 million. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. All right, Grant Paulson will jump on with me next. We'll talk Caps, Canadiens. We'll talk some draft as well.